I'm Pete Chargan. I'm your host today, but I'm not the star of the show. OpsumX is here with a mission of helping you deliver software without any human intervention at all. We have some products, especially OpsumX Enterprise for Spinnaker, that helps you secure your software delivery. We have global customers all around the world, and we're a leading contributor to Spinnaker. I'd like to introduce our two speakers today. Our first speaker is Gopal Damodi. He's the CEO and founder of OpsumX. He's been in the software delivery area for quite some time. You may very well have heard him speak at conferences, tech talks, etc. Our other speaker is Funs, and Funs Kessen is the chief security architect here at OpsumX. He has been involved in a very large number of enterprise security implementations over a long and illustrious career. And he has also been the chief security architect at AWS. So he has a ton of value that he can add here. So that's the background of the people. What I'd like to do now is to get going. So Gopal, I'd like to toss it over to you for the first question. What are the key aspects of secure delivery?
Thank you, Pete. To think about delivery, and I think Funs can speak, give an additional color. To me, there are three aspects to securing delivery. One is, the first and foremost is that the securing the CD process, which is essentially guaranteeing that the artifact that is to be deployed, that gets deployed, is the artifact that is supposed to get deployed. So all the RBAC, everything is in place. The second aspect is assessing that the risk within the artifact itself and ensuring what is deployed is secure. And today, people do a bunch of things to make sure, a lot of security scanning, et cetera, to be done to make sure that that is true. The third aspect is what I frame as observability, auditability, and insights. Essentially, can we prove or ascertain that the delivery process is secure and auditable? And if something were to happen, is it possible to trace back to the source of the problem? And so those are three pillars. And there's obviously all of this comes with best practices and policies, et cetera. Yeah, so if you look at the delivery process today, especially at scale and speed, security becomes a very big challenge. There is roughly, there's an orchestration that we do during delivery. That means you have pipelines, you have multi-cloud deployments, and then there is the intelligence sort of a problem, which is at every stage in the pipeline, there is some gatekeeper, and you need to make sure that the person approving is actually the right person, he's getting the right data, et cetera. The second is, at various stages in the process, there's a risk verification that needs to happen. Somebody looks at test data or during deploy, logs and metrics. And as a, within that itself, you could have security sort of issues that are unearthed. And the third would be the fine-grained policies, making sure that what gets checked in doesn't go into production without the right policy checks. And the fourth is, once at any time, you want to make sure that your artifact is sort of certified in some sense to be in production. And when in production, if there's a problem, how do you sort of trace back? Right? All of this gets complicated when the scale and speed of releases increase, which is increasing for everybody. Everybody wants, as we talk to customers, we see that most customers want to have at least one or two applications that they want to release faster. And the scale of release is increasing. And we have Funs, who's more of a domain expert here. Funs, do you want to add some color to what I said?
Yeah, well, I think it's interesting. You know, if you take those three domains where you say, well, the base of the platform needs to, you know, adhere to certain security standards that people have, you know, typical things like role-based access control, but also making sure the containers themselves are secure, so people can meddle with what's going on in those containers themselves. So, you know, there's an audit trailing aspect there and a control aspect there. And then when you move up, the green is an Azure kind of color. You know, you get into, am I delivering a secure workload? You know, does it adhere to the standards that I want to apply to it? And the interesting thing we see is a lot of people have these elements spread out throughout their organization and different responsibilities in different areas, but they're not glued together. And I think, you know, to the point Gopal was making earlier, is like what we see is people want, you know, faster is the new fast, people want speed, and they want to do have more control over their release process. And because of the bifurcation we see in organizations, that doesn't happen. So if you can bring this all together, you actually give people the possibility and ability to accelerate their deployment cycle and their delivery cycle and give them more control over it. Because the bifurcation of all these responsibilities also makes it very not very transparent to people what the actual issues are. So if we zoom out a bit, what we see is there's a security organization that checks, for example, a artifact or checks artifacts, and they do that on a monthly basis. And then they create tickets based on those artifacts. Wait, we have artifacts with security issues in them. But these artifacts already ended up in production. So they're behind the fact. And what we're seeing is that people really want that integration and really want that cohesion where you know before you're deploying something if it adheres to the standards you have. Now that kind of comes into the third layer, observability inside an audit, right? So how do we trace something? How do we find something? How do we know that it is what we say it is? So making it easy for people to find those elements. So we're seeing that the whole trailing and tracing capability kind of folds into attestation and controls. So that's a really important component there.
So Funs, let's give me a color on sort of some of the best practices and frameworks we encounter. And obviously I set a frame saying that, hey, there are these three sort of areas of making sure the delivery is happening securely, the what is delivered is secure, and we have observability. Give me a color on sort of what are the best practices and frameworks in a nutshell.
So if we look at best practices and frameworks, I think a difficult thing is that there's a lot of vendors that are calling what they do a framework, which is kind of like, which is a difficult conversation to have, right? Because a vendor is obviously saying, hey, my product does this and blah, blah, blah. But if you look at it in an abstract way, there's a couple of people that wrote really good documentation on this. The DevOps Automated Governance Architecture, that's a really, really strong document. And it's done by a group of industry leaders together with John Willis, one of the founders of DevOps, who's working for Red Hat at the moment. He's doing a bunch of stuff around automated governance. And the thing that people kind of forget is that security is an implementation of what governance wants. And that's a really important thing. So knowing what the company needs and what the business needs and projecting that in a way that is tangible for security from a security perspective is really important. So it's really cool if you try to do everything all the time and make everything as secure as possible and plug all your servers, but eventually that's not going to bring the business. So it's very important to kind of go through the aspect of what do we need from a governance perspective, what do we need from a certification perspective, what do we need from an audit perspective, and then see how that kind of rolls into your security, play. And that actually needs to go into the automation you do around it. And I think that document is a really valuable document because it talks about attestations of controls. It talks about all those things and how you implement them. There's a reference implementation for it as well. Then the automated cloud governance from ONUG is a really good document as well. I think everybody should read Continuous Delivery Reliable Software Releases through Build, Test, and Deployment Automation from Jeff Humble and Farley. I mean, it kind of outlines what pipeline thinking is and why you should be doing this. I mean, they wrote their own tool at some point, and it's a commercial tool. You can buy it. That is what it is. But I think the book is very important because they came from a world where they were doing this in practice. And it talks about how you gain trust in the pipeline and how you built that out. And kind of how that works. The other one that's really good is the DoD Enterprise DevSecOps reference design, but it tries to boil the ocean a bit. So if you're only interested in software delivery, it's kind of like, it's a lot to take in. So it's like you want to skip some parts and kind of zoom in on that. That's And NIST obviously has some resources, but they haven't put it all together yet. So they're working on something, I think. And as far as I've seen, they've not really put it together. I might be wrong there, but that's kind of where they are. I think one of the key things, however, that people tend to forget is it's about observability. So if we talk about security, if I'm not seeing it, I can't have an opinion on it. So, you know, that's one of the key things. So everything you do needs to have a tangible output, or which leads to a control and attestation, or leads to an action. If you don't have actionable outputs or outputs that are an attestation, they're useless. If you don't have any attestations, you don't have any guarantees that the controls you have are actually real. So that's one of the key things there. So focus on maximizing observability. And the other thing is security of your pipelines themselves, obviously. And you know, for us, that's inherent to the way we OES works. But for a lot of people, you know, they don't even put it in GitHub or a versioned S3 bucket, and they don't even audit what's going on there. You know, it just lives somewhere and people click around and it'll change things. So making sure that those pipelines are secure is a really important thing. And then what we're seeing is that policy as code is becoming really popular. People are trying to, you know, kind of grappling onto that, and the notion, something that started with OPI and Styra. We see Sentinel from HashiCorp, which is kind of embedded and vault now. We see people doing your own. But policy as code means that we define what the rules of the system are around the system in an abstract way, while the system can do its job, but reserving the system and telling the system, no, you can't do that at certain points in time. And we'll get into that a bit deeper later on. But that's kind of the two things I think are important. And then if we talk about leading with the conceptual process, you know, what we spoke about earlier, we see that companies have a lot of these things in place already, but they're very, very scattered. And so you take that process and you start looking at how do we automate that process as quickly as possible in as small as possible chunks with all the players participating together. So that's kind of what we mean with lead with the conceptual process.
Thank you, Fons. I guess the next question to you would be, you know, how and where do one start? The way I think about it is, as you are, you know, when I talk to customers, I put them into sort of DevOps maturity stages, as in there are people that just do Jenkins-based deploy. There are people who use sort of pipelines. Essentially, they have automated workflows. The third stage is people who do deployment strategies. Then there's a fourth stage, which is sort of very security conscious, compliance conscious. They have security compliance as code. And the fifth stage is kind of like the Netflix of the world. They're continuously delivering at every minute of the way, right? Obviously, it depends on where people are, but the way I think about when I talk to CIOs, the way I frame it is you need to think about it from, hey, are you trying to secure your pipeline? Are you trying to secure a delivery? You need to absolutely secure a delivery and think about all the RBAC, et cetera. And I think you can give some color around it. And then, you know, how do you get your, make sure that your artifact is secure and then the observability. So where does people start? Do they start with observability or how should people think about this problem and move them to the next level of where they want to be?
I think your observation about the layers, you know, with Valhalla at the top, I think that's a very good observation, because I see the same thing, right? The DevOps maturity, I mean, it's you've got people that say they're doing something and are doing, and some of them are not doing anything. There's even a layer below that where nothing happens. And then you've got the layer that you mentioned, Jenkins, and you know, you build it up. And I think most of the people are below half of that. Like 90% of the companies are below half of what we're talking about. I mean, if we're observing in the market, right? There's a couple of people that are really, really at the top. And those are the examples people take, like, oh, we need to be like Facebook. We need to be like Google. We need to be like this company. We need to do what they're doing. But it's very hard. And getting there is not something you do in a day, right? That's kind of the issue. So initially, you create a plan, and the plan needs to be very simple. You need to have a very simple goal, and it needs to be small. Think in small chunks. You need to chop it up in small chunks. Because if you're like, we're going to automate everything, it's like, okay, but what is everything? And you need to describe everything, and it becomes a very complex thing. So what we're seeing is that most companies that we work with and I've worked with in the past, you start with small chunks. You start with the low-hanging fruit and the simple things that are hard to do by humans, that are relatively easy to automate, but are cumbersome for humans to do, because you want to take the humans out of the equation, right? The humans make mistakes. They have a bad day, a bad morning. They do a typo and they break something or something goes wrong. So the initial onset is that you create a plan around what are the repeatable processes that are easy automatable, that take a lot of effort and time today. And those are the ones you start with. So for example, we have a customer that uses Terraform, and they had SREs doing manual Terraform deploys, and it would take them a day or 2 days to roll out certain aspects of their platform. So that was one of the first things we took and said, okay, we're going to take that away from you, and we're going to automate that. We're going to take that away and put that in a pipeline, and we're going to make that simple. And now they can push button, or actually automated deploy that same thing in an hour, instead of an SRE sitting there for 2 days and figuring out what he's doing and running different scripts and different things. So I think it's about taking tangible things and automating them. That's where you should start. And the awful thing usually is that security doesn't come into that. Security is like, a lot of people are like, security, let's not inform them about that. Let's spark that for later. And I think one of the things that we're going into in like the second part is that you need to put responsibilities where they belong. And that's something we tend to see as well, that the security group is not informed or involved initially. They get involved later and then they have an opinion. And it's great that they have an opinion, but they're not putting their fingers on the keyboard. And this is, I think, a general issue we see. We've got architects, we've got security people, we've got all these people running around, and eventually there are two people with fingers on the keyboard doing this stuff. So it's very important to put responsibilities where they belong. And I think this is also part of the DevSecOps movement, that security needs to put their fingers on the keyboard and actually do something. So, and this is great about the pipeline world, right? Security can actually insert something there and add meaning and add something profound to that system. But you know, that is what we see in most successful companies, is that everybody participates in building that pipeline instead of having one group of people doing that. So I think that's a very important thing. So distributing the workload and making sure people have actual items for the outcomes they need to have. That which brings me kind of into the next step, right? So if you look at actual outcomes for the system you're creating, which folds into what I was mentioning earlier, if you have a system that creates output, that's great. But if nobody can do something with the output, it's useless output. Or it's there for attestation purposes, which means that later on a auditor or a compliance officer or your security team can look at something and say, oh, we're doing the right thing because we have these attestations, which is also an actual outcome. So that kind of brings me into, if I have a pipeline and it breaks, it needs to tell me why it broke. Somebody shouldn't have to go in and go spelunking and finding the needle in the haystack and figuring out like, why did this break? What happened here? Going through millions of lines of logs and figuring out what is the difference of what happened before. So you need to be very concise and very precise and meticulous about what you're sending someone. So that's a very important component there as well. If you don't do that, it becomes like Gopal showed earlier, you get this five hour lull in the process where somebody's trying to figure out why something broke and eventually says, I don't know, it didn't break, let's just deploy it, which is not valuable, right? Because you're holding up the pipeline, you're holding up the process, and you haven't figured out what went wrong. That's a very important component as well. And then from a DevSecOps perspective, you need to participate. Like I mentioned earlier, these people have to do something with their hands on the keyboard and create value. I think what we're seeing historically, and you know, I'm going to be blasphemous in the church, as the Dutch would say it. Security people are distant from the operational aspect of the implementation of their security. Often, not all of them, but often. Which means that they have an opinion, but don't participate in implementing the solution. And I think we need to move away from that. That's one. And two is we need to move to a trust but verify model. So security needs to be more minded of the ideology, like we guide people in the right direction, we help them in the right direction. And if they derail, we tap them back onto the rails. So we create guardrails and gates to make sure people are doing the right things. And if they're not staying between the guardrails, they hit a gate. And that gate will tell them like, hey, you need to change something or do something to actually pass the gate. And that gate might be a manual operation that somebody from security is observing what you're doing or says, oh, actually, this is okay what you're doing. We'll allow this. But those are really important components.
Thank you.
And then, you know, that kind of brings you to the last bit. If you want velocity, you need to reduce friction. And that's the guardrails and gates discussion that I was talking about earlier.
Thank you, Fons. moving on to the next question. I think this is also one of Vijay from one of the audience asked the same question is, what is the role of automation and machine learning in the security process? I think it's a fascinating question, primarily because OpsMX, by the way, those of you who don't know, OpsMX originally was DevOpsMX, which is DevOps machine. And so that's the machine, the AI in the name, and the role of let me give you my perspective, and then I want to ask for your perspective. As Fons was saying, that at the end of the day, there is a lot of log information. There's a lot of information that is getting generated in the process of going from code to deploy. There is a lot of process. There's a lot. And all the three pillars that we talked about, both in terms of security, making sure the all the three pillars we talked about is generating a lot of data. And the machine learning at a very high level, is useful for in all three aspects. Right? I mean, I think that's, but I won't get into all of them. Right? I think the simplest way I think about is, there's a human that is doing the task today, and they're getting a bunch of data, and they're using domain knowledge. Now, there, as a human processes it, he has some domain insight, and a before and after, and a set of rules that the governance has to meet. Right? So the human, whatever the human is doing to process that information and learn that and do before and after, can be automated through machine learning. Right? I mean, that's sort of the extremely higher level goal. Now we at OpsMX, what we do is at some of the places, especially during the test deploy, during production, during deployed in production, there are things that we look for use machine learning to help those three pillars get more fortified and more automated. And with that's my higher level, but Fons, go ahead, give me your perspective, and then I'll jump back in.
I mean, you touched upon a really important point there that I want to double click on, because you were talking about the humans, right? And as you know, I love humans, but as long as they're not doing manual stuff all the time.
do you really love humans, Fons?
We've been drinking a couple of times, right? I mean. Yeah. I really love humans. I do. But you're touching upon a really important point there. You're talking about all this information, all this data, right, that's coming to someone. If you look at that deploy pipeline or at that whole process, and somebody needs to make a tangible decision, is this okay or not? And I think if you look at humans, we can only hold a finite amount of information and a little nugget here. I mean, we can only oversee so much. And then there's this bias we have for what we think we know. And that's a dangerous part, like, right? We think we know something, and that's therefore we look in certain things, but that's why we miss a lot of other things. And I think to your point, right, if we look at the what machine learning brings, it brings aspects that we normally would not look at. And it looks at those aspects and tells us, like, hey, there's something weird here. There's something that usually doesn't happen, and it's happening. And I think that's really powerful. I mean, I just want to double click on that, because that's, to me, that is like the Holy Grail, right? If you can light something out and show something to someone that they'd never realized, that where it's like, oh my God, this could have gone horribly wrong if we put this in production, and they would never have noticed. And I think that is a real powerful thing. I mean, if we talk about machine learning, that is the key thing, right? All those metrics, all those logs, and inferring that, and then making a tangible score or analysis of what the outcome should be, and if that outcome is what you expect it to be. I mean, I just wanted to double click, because I think that is, and I think I jumped ahead to like point three now, but and maybe point four, you know, anomaly detection, root cause analysis, because that is one of the key things I was talking about earlier, you know, finding a needle in the haystack. I mean, we see it on a daily basis with customers. I've seen it in the past where SREs, DevOps engineers, developers are looking at hundreds of lines of code, thousands of lines of code, and trying to figure out where did it go wrong? What happened? Is it going wrong? Is it doing what it's supposed to do? And the difficulty with that is if you have a lot of experience with applications, you'll find, and application engineers and developers, you'll find that every development group has their own standards on how they like to log and what that's supposed to look like. So there are groups that will happily, pump out a bunch of things that look like errors to someone else, but to them it's like, oh, that's just, information we vent from the system. And that it's disconnecting and connecting, or that it has a connection error, is not a problem because it solves it itself. But to someone who's a untrained onlooker and not aware of the intricacies of that development group, it would look like the application is performing horribly and it's doing all the wrong things. And I think that is also a thing that if you want to have a unbiased view on how something is performing, it's sometimes not good to have a fresh pair of eyes from a human look at it, but have an analysis from a system that actually tells like, no, it's behaving within spec. It's doing what it always does. This is normal. And we have examples of that, right, Gopal? I mean, we've Absolutely. Seen that with multiple customers. I mean,
so one question came in from the audience that I'd like to interject here. It seems appropriate. And that is, how long does it take to build the model that you just mentioned? And does your product, OpsMX Enterprise for Spinnaker, come with these models built in?
Yeah, so let me take that question. I think it's from Vijay. The OpsMX Enterprise for Spinnaker comes with a layer of intelligence on top of Spinnaker. And we also have that layer that layer of intelligence works independent of Spinnaker also. So if you have, let's say, Jenkins or Argo CD or other sort of platforms, we do. That's at a very high level. And in terms of the machine learning itself, that comes with models. And Funs was saying, when an application gets deployed, that application is very unique. And so we need to learn about that application characteristics. And so it's not that we do give a seed, but and so an application itself is more complex than just a piece of code that you wrote. It has libraries and all that stuff. So there is stuff that comes in, and we give all of that. But there's a layer that is most important, that is very specific to you and you alone, the way you logged, all of that, that needs to get learned. And that's the fundamental, what keeps us excited at OpsMX. Right? And so we've designed the system that it learns through the data by observation for release after release, but also gets human to give you input. Because it's very interesting how humans can give very subtle input and the system can learn. Right. And then obviously there is the seed data that comes because we look at a lot of other patterns. Right. Vijay, this is a longer conversation, but I kind of want to give you a shorter answer. But happy to take the question a lot more later. Pete, can we keep going? Yeah. Yeah. So
this question is: we've talked about some theory and some frameworks and some best practices, but come back to the reality. What are some of the takeaways that you found from actual implementations and hopefully successful implementations, but also if there have been challenges that you've run into?
Perfect. So let me give my perspective, and then I'll hand it over to this human hating guy, Funs. and this also relates to what Ram was asking. One of the attendees was asking a question is that ultimately we can boil the ocean, right? And ultimately you can't just say, I'm going to remove the human out. So OpsMX, what we've realized is that you have to first automate. Instead of, we think about, don't put an automated gate, but put a semi-automated gate. meaning that, again, there's a customer of ours who, when they deploy, they take about 3.6 hours to do deployment verification. And there's like SEC, there's an app engineer, there's an SRE all together in the weekend, right? And we reduce that to 10 minutes of, and we also noticed that 75% of the time, you know, you actually don't need even 10 minutes. It's just obvious, either it failed or it passed, right? And this is a gray zone. And so you should always start with something that is trustable and, you know, verifiable by you. You have to get confidence, your security has to get confidence. And that is a key takeaway from working with lots of customers. Don't boil the ocean. Start with something small. Start with something that says, okay, I'm going to help you go from 3.6 hours to even half an hour. That's great. Right. And so then you will start sort of you know, realizing the you start optimizing, and then you'll get into a fully automated state. Right. I mean, if there's no that's my one key takeaway, and I'll give it back to Funs to comment more.
Very solid points, Gopal. Really, that's definitely. I mean, we all see the same thing, right? I mean. So one of the key things that I also encountered is that when people start building pipelines, that there is some ambiguity of who owns the pipeline. I mean, we actually help customers build pipelines because some of them, we're educating them, we're helping them, you know, understand how it works. We're giving them tools. OES is a huge toolbox, which is really powerful. But there's a lot of guidance and handholding sometimes. And we see that people get confused over who owns the pipeline and who gets to do what. So a pipeline fails, and everybody just stands around and goes like this. And it's like, hey guys, there's a message in Slack that the pipeline failed. And it's like, well, yeah, okay, but somebody needs to go in and look, click the link to see what broke. So it's really important to kind of get to a point where you say, this group or these people are responsible for the pipeline being green all the time. A company I'm very familiar with in the Netherlands, in Amsterdam, where I was before, had the notion of a sheriff. So every day the sheriff would change, somebody else would be the sheriff. And the sheriff's only goal was to make the build green. It didn't matter how, if he had to do it himself, go to people and whip them or, you know, hold them at gunpoint. But his sole job that day was to keep, or week, I think it was week actually, was to keep the build green. And you should do the same for a pipeline. A pipeline is an indicator if you can deliver viable business functionality to the business. If it's not deploying, you're not adding value to the business. It's a business function. So it should always be green, or it should always be able to deploy, or it should always be deploying. If it's not, there needs to be someone responsible to whip the right people to make sure it goes green. And we're seeing that on multiple areas. And I've seen that in the past a lot that, you know, they kind of walk away and wave your handy thing where people don't take responsibility for it. So that's a really important thing, I think. Then that kind of folds into the fear of the pipeline, where people kind of go like, well, it broke and I don't know how it broke. It's like, well, you can just look at where it broke and you can analyze why it broke and you can fix why it broke. And that's a really important thing, that people educate themselves on, hey, how does this actually work? How do I interact with it? And that's something we do as well. We educate people on like, hey, you can just click here, you can click here, you can pull the log here, you can see what it's doing. Oh, something was missing here. So it's really important to get to that educational point that people stop fearing it. And that is also a part of it, that people that fear the pipeline don't add value to the pipeline. So they won't expand the pipeline and involve it. And that kind of folds into like the fourth point. Pipelines are like Lego. If you think about pipelines, they're all little Lego blocks. And you can make them really complex, you can make them really simple, you can tie multiple together, but it's important that you observe it like a Lego box. It's not something you break and it's broken forever. No, you can fix it again, you can change it, and you can morph it. And the difficult thing there is that people believe that there's an end state always. I mean, we have this discussion with architects often. Can you document the pipeline for us? It's like, can you make a Visio from the pipeline? It's like, well, it's different every day. So you can go into the UI, you can see the pipeline, it's stored in an S3 bucket or in Git. You can observe the changes there. So it's all there. Yeah, but I really like a Visio. And that means that somebody has to go in and manually maintain a Visio every day, which is ridiculous, right? So I think people need to get to the notion that it's something that's in flux and changes, and it's well guarded because it's maintained somewhere. and it's traceable. So I think you have all the elements you want, but people need to understand that that's the way it works. I think that's a really important thing. Then the hybrid teams kind of folds into the initial thing I was talking about, where you have the security team that says, well, you have to do things this way, or you have to have this, and then kind of walk away and, you know, let people to their own device. So what I used to do in the past was put a security person in a team, in a DevOps team. And a security person needs to add value to the team, as in hands on a keyboard or guide the SRE in the right direction to have the right outcome there, which is a very important thing. So the mix of DevOps, SRE, and security, and DevOps obviously being an operations or dev person, because what we tend to see as well is if the pipeline breaks, for example, it might be the software that broke it, some testing in the software. So what if the developer is not in the loop there? So that means that someone needs to go and investigate, eventually go back to the developer and go, hey, your stuff broke. So it's very important to have those disciplines together and observing the pipeline and knowing who's responsible for which part and why. Then embracing policy as code and define the rule of the game. I think we touched upon that earlier. If we look at people building pipelines, initially, it's kind of the wild, wild west, so to speak. Everybody kind of does stuff and puts stuff in, and it's really cool and, you know, it's really fun. But if you're deploying things to production in regulated environments, it's really important to figure out, well, you know, who's deploying what, when, and where, and why. So is somebody who did a PR and kind of merged their own PR allowed to deploy to production? Well, no, for example. And that's a policy you could implement, right? That is a policy. For example, JSOX demands that you can't do that, for example. And I think SOC 2 Type 2 has one of those rules as well somewhere, and ISO something has. So there's definitely rules from a policy perspective. If you want to be compliant, you have to embrace policy as code and define those things in a policy as code. We carry some of those things in OES, but they're extensible and extendable. And you can just add policies wherever you want and guide that pipeline in the right direction. And also have tangible output where it tells people, hey, buddy, you can't merge your own PR and then expect it to be deployed. That's not how the system works. So you can actually give that message back to the developer so you can go back and tap someone else on the shoulder. Hey, buddy, could you merge my PR so I can actually go into production? So it's, you know, that's also part of the education story where you have to take people by the hand and help them. And the system needs to do that inherently. So the system needs to be descriptive and create these guardrails leading either to gates or to the outcome of deploying your software. And I think that's kind of the notion of educating people on pipeline thinking. You know, that's kind of the end of the story. And this is something we deal with on a daily basis, like all of these points.
Thank you, Fons. And thank you everybody for attending this fireside chat. I think there was a couple of questions here. And if you are interested in, I think Ram was asking about 2-3 native use cases for ML. We don't have time to cover this, but happy to follow up. But if I were to just bring it back home, I think those three pillars of both the, you know, making sure the delivery is secure, the artifact that is being delivered is secure, and having observability and auditability and traceability, I think that what I'm realizing as I'm talking to customers is it's the rate at which the speed and scale of releases is increasing is just phenomenal. So I just worry that if you don't have a proper start thinking about security, it's going to be a disaster that could potentially happen. And I that's why we wanted to start this sort of a fireside chat. And if there's any to the attendees, if there's any way we can help answer your questions, feel free to reach out to us, me and Funds and anybody at OpsMX can help. Thank you.
If you do have questions, feel free to contact us through this last poll. And just indicate the first one. You know, there are some security issues where I would like your advice. Or if you'd like to do something that's in more detail, we do have a complimentary continuous delivery security workshop. So feel free to indicate yes on these or drop us information or drop us a question at info@opsmx.io. I'd also like to say thank you very much to Funds and Gopal for allowing us to publish their email addresses. If you have questions, follow up with them, go for it. And if you have any questions again for OpsumX in general, info@opsumx.io. Thank you very much. We really appreciate it. And I hope that you have a great day.
Thank you.